It's good dance music for you, Rich. It's Snarky Puppy. We're all set.
Who are you calling a snarky puppy?
Snarky Puppy. That's who we're listening to this morning. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's Thursday. It's the 17th of January. Very nice to have you with us. 15 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Let me introduce our fantastic panel to you, and then we'll get started. We have a lot of good stuff to talk about, a lot of weird stuff to talk about, and we'll do all of that right now. Rosemary Armeo is with us. We are sad to say it's her last day before she goes back to Jordan, Amman, Jordan, where she is her primary workplace. And she's been off for a couple of weeks and has been generous enough to come and join us.
It's been very fun.
Now, with that said, if your flight gets canceled because of the weather and you end up coming in tomorrow, we'll say goodbye to you tomorrow.
Okay, that sounds good. That's a deal. That's a deal.
You're welcome to come tomorrow if your flight gets canceled. But good to have you here.
Okay.
Ira Fussfeld is with us. Good morning, Ira. He is the he is the publisher emeritus. That is what he is of the Daily Freeman. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you and all. Nice to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. Our good friend Rich Honan is here. He is a corporate attorney and a very, very good friend, and we are thrilled whenever Rich can join us. And we're lucky today. I got you in before Rosemary left, and I was.
I appreciate it.
Yes.
It's always great to see you.
Well, I appreciate it too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I just, you know, it's good for ratings.
And I noticed you put Ira between Rosemary and Rich, so that, you know.
Well, originally I was going to have Rosemary sit next to you, and then we were worried that Rosemary may hit you.
Yeah, you're in more danger than Rich.
But as we just discussed on the media project, the governor is going to make it a felony to attacking a journalist. So we're feeling a little safe.
That's an interesting point, Ira. What happens if one journalist attacks another?
Ah, interesting. All right, I have to think about that.
Well, we'll have to test the law. And Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you? I put a little piece of paper in front of
that.
You. Okay.
I am not happy. I'm sad, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Something we said?
Yes. What we really need here, we have $409,000, so it's the $500,000 total in the lockbox.
Oh, well, that seems something to be about, though, right?
Well, yes, Joe, you're right. But one of the things that I always worry about in the middle of the night is what happens if everybody who loves the station decides, okay, this one I'm staying home for. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give them any money. I'm not going to keep it going. We need basically $90,000 in order to get to that $500,000. Now, we had a month ago. Now, I think the dream may be happening. You go to WAMC.org, you drop something in, and you say, Alan, don't worry. We've got your collective back. More than one.
So 25 days.
Boy, that's not enough.
25 days.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, I'm just
made my dreams worse.
4,000 a day?
Yeah.
A little less?
Yeah, I think we can do it. What do you think, Rich?
But thinking about that, Rich, in the fund drive itself, we often make $100,000 in a day or more, $200,000 sometime.
This is what I'm saying.
One day
fund
drive.
You would think. And maybe somebody would want to end the whole drive and put a real nice, you know, thing in there, but whatever.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I believe you're going to make it.
I don't know.
I say that from the vantage point of as a listener and as a board member.
You sit there and you pompously say something like that. That's always so easy for you to do.
Alan's mantra, you know, buy the premise, buy the game.
Yes, I got it.
Well, buy the damn premise. good morning. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about, and we are going to get right to it. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, and let's get going. So we'll begin with the shutdown and Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, is asking Donald Trump to reschedule the State of the Union amid the shutdown. She said that he should scrap or delay his January 29th State of the Union address amid the partial government shutdown, an extraordinary request that escalated the partisan battle over his border wall, even as bipartisan group of lawmakers pressed him to reopen the government and make room for compromise. In a letter to Mr. Trump that underscored how the shutdown fight has poisoned hopes of bipartisan work at the start of a divided government, Ms. Pelosi cited security concerns as a reason for proposing that the president postpone the annual presidential ritual of addressing a joint session of Congress in a televised speech during prime time. I didn't realize that that was an invitation thing, and basically she's withholding the invitation.
And until, was it Harding or Wilson, one of the two, there was never a requirement for a president to give a State of the Union speech.
Wilson
it was only
was the
to
first
deliver
who
the
did
speech.
It, and yeah. since then it's been copied. Yeah. There's still no requirement.
Well, there's a requirement in the Constitution that he
submitted in writing.
Yeah. 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 And that's
which
why
is what George did, you know.
Yes.
That's exactly what
Washington,
George did.
Washington, not
yeah.
Bush.
Yeah.
Or Bush.
Well, I think this is terrific.
George the first.
I think this is terrific on two levels. One is I think that we all know what kind of speech that we would have heard if he got up, and it would have been the height of hypocrisy for just to hear him talk and see Pelosi politely applauding behind him and all the rest. I don't believe that they should have given him in this instant that opportunity. But beyond that, I think that this is a piece of political theater that the country can do without. It's become a joke. You're the president of whichever party gets up and says something, and half the audience stands up and cheers, and the other half sit there like statues. I don't think that it does the country any good to be portrayed this way. Just send a report over, and in Trump's case, you know, somebody write it for him.
Okay, well, I want to talk about it from Pelosi's point of view. The Sicilian in me loves that diss. It was a brilliant master move. She's getting under her skin, and she intends to do that. There is a price, however, when you do that. And I think Trump has been ominously silent and is probably planning a super whopper production of a State of the Union, perhaps in a stadium someplace filled with people and production values and walls around the world. And the networks will, I think, cover
it. You think
it,
so?
I think they have to. And so he may end up, he won't be a loser in this because he doesn't like to lose.
Rich,
I'm disappointed that I mean, to me, Ira, it kind of sounds like you know, censorship before the fact, right? I mean, this is
not censorship at all.
First of all, let's put aside the fact that it's called for in the Constitution. I don't understand how it advances the ball not allowing something that's been, you know, a hallmark of America that we could all remember.
My cheap shot to you would be there's a lot of things that are called for in the Constitution that seem to be omitted by this administration.
Mm-hmm. I disagree.
Okay.
But
Emoluments.
Is that right?
No, I think it's a bad thing. Whether it's good political theater or not, I mean, I'm talking about her refusal of and is it only the speaker, by the way? Do you need to be invited by the speaker, or can any member of the House?
No. You need to be invited by the person in charge of each House. Mm-hmm. Person in charge of each House. So the Republicans have to do it in the Senate, and neither of them have done it so far.
And none of you would. I mean, out of everybody's collective sense of history, nobody feels any dismay at this?
No, I agree with you in the sense that I believe we should have a State of the Union address. But I also agree that it is very difficult to say the State of our Union is strong, which what else are you going to say when the government is shut down? And I think that is very difficult to do. And if you're just saying to postpone it, I think that seems like a fair request.
Didn't you guys
what upset me, Rich, was when the Netanyahu was invited into Congress to give a speech without the White House even being notified. So this idea of breach of protocol has been perfected by the Republicans, and if the Democrats are getting to play the game now too, great.
Yeah, well, I think there's a big difference between
bypassing the president on
the president
a matter of foreign policy
versus a foreign leader. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I'm not saying I would have agreed with the invitation to a foreign leader in the absence of presidential approval. And I'm a big Netanyahu fan, but to not invite the president to give the State of the Union.
And she did not invite him. Her exact wording, which was careful, Rich, was we should postpone this or consider a way to present this in a safer way. It was not like, don't darken my door.
It sure sounded like that. And the safer way just begs the question, too.
She's smart.
I'll say to you what I always say whenever you guys start with this is, What would have happened 4 years ago if
when
somebody
you
did
guys
this?
Start?
No,
well,
but no,
but
just
we
tell
say
me.
That all the time.
Okay, but tell me for real, what would have happened 4 years ago if somebody said President Obama is not invited to give the State of the Union?
They said something worse, Rich. They said, no, we're not considering your Supreme Court nominee. And what happened? Nothing, because Obama didn't go to court, which he should
that
have.
That wasn't
over
worse.
It, oh, my what? God, yes, it is worse.
Well, I'm just asking you, what would you guys have said? What would the country have said?
There are so many examples of that whataboutism that you can turn on your head, and I can't even think of one because there are so many. But there are so many things going on in this administration where the line is, could you imagine what would have happened, or how the Republicans would have reacted if Obama had done what
shut
Trump
the government
was doing.
For a yeah. record amount of time
over a wall that nobody
over
wants.
A wall, yes, said no, I never, no, I never ever said Mexico will pay for the wall. How did you get that impression? If there had been outright, how many are we up to now? Over 5,000 lies documented by the press. How's that? There's three examples of whataboutism.
Yeah, and we could do the same thing on both sides, and then I go back to I don't understand how it advances the ball to reduce the amount of communication. I thought just a couple of weeks ago, weren't the Pelosi and Schumer were saying the president's speech when he gave his first address,
his stupid Oval Office non-speech. Yes, we remember it.
Yeah, yeah. And,
but let's not make no mistake. Although her cover story is the security, and there may be a little of germ of truth in that. The bottom line is this is a political power play on her part. She has got the power to do this, and it makes a major statement. As Rosemary points out, there could be some negative fallout for her, but I think it's a particularly impressive and symbolic thing that she's done.
Every time to which I would say, thanks God. And here's why. We finally have some balance in the United States government. The Republican congresspeople, Rich, have been sitting on their hands doing nothing when terrible things were happening. Finally, we have this gutsy lady who comes along and she says, I'm holding you accountable for closing down the government and the rest of it. Hooray for her.
Every time the Democrats try and do something that goes against the kind of the tradition of the way we do things in the country, it has come back to bite them. And if you don't believe that, ask what happened when Harry Reid suspended the cloture rule and has been and look at the use that McConnell has made out of that. Do you not think that this is going to bounce back against the next time that somebody is in power and says we don't want to hear from the president?
You should talk about guys who the Congress changing the norms. We have a president of the United States who hasn't followed norm number one, and you know it, and has changed everything in his power so that it's all egocentric, narcissistic centric Trump. It's disgusting.
And in this case, the norm being a spoken grand production, as Ira described it very well, of the state of the state, it wouldn't be so bad if it went back to written form. Well, I would not be upset about that.
But if we're going
to
do that,
as opposed to the emoluments clause.
But Rosemary, if we're going to do that, then we shouldn't have hearings on Supreme Court justices, right?
Not the way they're currently constituted.
We shouldn't have presidential debates, which are basically joint press conferences.
True.
Right? We shouldn't have almost any congressional or Senate hearing. Right, which
is
really
showcases.
Which is showcases.
We agree on all of them.
Yeah, but then,
that's right.
But where does that leave us?
Well, it leaves
honest
us,
communication.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's not. But you're saying no communication. I'd rather have bad communication than no communication.
No, I'm
saying
change
the rules. You can't attack
the
institution just because the people who happen to be populating the institution happen to be mismanaging it.
Yes, I can. And in this case, she's not saying ban the state of the state, keep him away.
Exactly.
She's saying we're changing the rules, which is exactly what we're talking about. Let's change the rules so that hearings are genuine, that debates are the way they were on West Wing, a real debate. Let's do all that.
You know, it's interesting. I've been rewatching the West Wing.
Intriguing.
Intriguing. And it's so funny. I was going to make a note of some of the quotes out of the West Wing. Which actually I think apply so well
today.
Well, today, but probably not in the way that you would agree with me. But some
probably
of the, it's true. But I will make a list. I'm
going to
do that because I was
fun.
Actually
we'll
thinking because there's the president get there's impeachment talk in that one and there's all these things that they say that I say, wow, these are the things that I say when I'm defending Trump. And they're saying this, defending
a college-educated, PhD, articulate, wonderful president who I wish was real. Yeah, we get it.
Oh, we all wish that President Bartlet was real. I think that was. I think that was one of the hopes with Obama, and you know, things don't always
work out
that way.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Wasn't that fun? we have two more acts coming up. We'll be
AXE.
we'll be right back with Alan and Rich and Ira and Rosemary, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here. Rich Honan is dancing.
Alone.
Well, you are looking to Ira and...
Yeah.
Now you got Ira and Alan.
Now you know how my wife feels when we go to a wedding.
Rich is sort of like Gladys Knight without the pip.
There you go.
Oh, he stole your line.
It's okay.
And Rosemary Armijo. Okay, we have letters. Let's go there.
And Rosemary.
All right. Michael says, just wanted to say thanks for the classic, and classic is in capital letters, lineup. Thanks, Rosemary, and thanks, Rich.
Nice. You're welcome.
Anthony says, shutdown. I remember last year Rich telling us that shutdowns are really no big deal and don't really hurt that many people, just a few shuttered parks and people waiting for guaranteed back pay. I'm wondering if he still feels that way as we hear stories of individuals suffering around the country, including those government contractors who are out of work and will never receive back pay, and that's Anthony from Kingston.
I was talking about the last shutdown, which was very short in duration and was more inconvenience than anything else. I think this shutdown obviously is affecting people very badly, and I'd like them to reopen things as quickly as they can.
So you're changing your story somewhat like...
No, I said the last shutdown was short and was more of an inconvenience. This shutdown is of a much, much greater duration. It's a bigger problem.
I didn't finish my sentence.
Okay.
My sentence was, so you're changing your story, much like Gillibrand changed her story about not running while her full Senate term was going on.
Okay, that was a stretch, Alan. Even
you
for
so?
You,
stretch.
And also, somebody's going to hit me for that.
Yeah, you didn't attack.
Yeah, I'm not taking shots at Gillibrand. That was you.
No, not
at all.
And Lynn says tradition. If you want to hold a candle to tradition, let's start with Trump's tax returns. It's tradition to see them before the president sits in office.
Yeah, good example.
Let's start there, and that's from Lynn.
Well, the IRS is shut down right now, so there's not much they can do about
it. That's funny. Okay, Molly, who writes us quite frequently and who I very much admire, says, State of the Union. Good morning, panel, and thanks once again and forever for your intelligent, reasoned analysis. As for an invitation to the current occupant of the Oval Office to speak on the State of the Union, a speech is not required by the Constitution. A report is sufficient. Our putative. Is that the right word, putative?
Mm-hmm, yes.
No. Okay.
Depends where you're going to go with it.
Our putative.
It is a word, though.
Yes.
I didn't say putative. I said putative. Leader has disregarded protocols and traditions. This is one more time he is more than welcome to disregard. He was given prime time ostensibly to discuss his wall, in quotes, in whatever form it is taking now, which he turned into a campaign speech with a plea for money. We don't need that again, and that's Molly, sometimes in Lanesboro, but currently in Coconut Creek, Florida.
Nice.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah, myself. Yeah. And let's see here. Blecky says, dear panel, I hope the Democrats run on Medicare for all, and that the new Democratic president 2021 shuts down the government until he gets a single payer for all. The new president can cite Trump's actions of 2018 as precedent. That's interesting, Rich, considering what you've said.
Why did they say he?
That's a very good point. Very good point. All right. Melinda says, so true speech. Exactly what kind of speech do we think that Trump would give anyway? The state of our union is a mess right now, and all we'll hear from the speech will be another Trump rally for his wall. Nothing is normal anymore. None of what Trump does can be compared to any of our past presidents. Good for Pelosi, says Melinda.
I think Trump should show a gesture and say, if you invite me over to give the speech, you can all come back to the White House for hamburgers.
It's unbelievable. Kevin says,
Clemson-rific, yes.
Rich, collective sense of history. Any collective sense of history in quotes, died with the inauguration of Donald Trump.
Rich doesn't know what to do with that, and I'm not sure I blame him on that.
Brian says, dog in the house. Why would you let a dog in the house if you know it's going to make a mess? The reason the president originally wrote a State of the Union was because Washington felt it was familiar to it was familiar to the King of England addressing Parliament. It said familiar, but I think they meant similar.
Was I the only one, though, as you began that letter, was wondering whether they were going to Trump's invitation or us inviting Rich?
I thought I was the dog in the house. So thank you for not. Although we haven't finished the letter.
No, we're not
yet.
There yet.
Get back ahead,
it's much more.
That was good.
It was familiar and similar to the King of England addressing Parliament before the opening of the session. No, I think what happened was Washington had a bad experience. He went up to testify before the Senate, as I remember it, and they treated him in a less than respectful fashion. And he says, I'm never coming back here again.
Didn't he also really speak very quietly when he was speaking to large crowds? That was like a big problem with Washington. Like nobody actually heard him take the oath.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I have a book for you, by the way.
Oh.
You also had a bit
on
of
that?
No, did you know? I didn't know that there was a conspiracy to take out, right before the revolution, there was a conspiracy to take out Washington amongst his troops. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I heard about the book. I haven't read it yet.
I will give it to you.
Very good.
All right.
Very interesting. Duncan said, I disagree. I think having Trump address the Congress during the shutdown would be a masterstroke for the Democrats. How can he say the State of the Union is strong? I'd like to see how he lies his way out of this one. And that's from Duncan.
You know, when you had a president and all presidents, either party, would give a speech at the State of the Union and talk policy, then there would be agreements and disagreements. But it was always, to my memory, it was always discussed in political terms and in policy terms. Trump would not give that kind of speech. He's going to get up there, particularly in light of the shutdown, and he's going to be nasty. And I don't think for all of the disagreements in past states of the union, you didn't come away feeling there was nastiness. You came away feeling there was a difference of opinion, and that's what our system is all about. But Trump has elevated this to a different and very disgusting level, in my view.
Well, but if that's true, if he came up and gave a speech like that, that was that inappropriate and that, you know, negative, isn't that something we want to know?
We know.
Well, you guys know. I don't know.
And the third of the country who needs to know will not learn from the third of the country that agrees with Trump and Fox News will cheer him on, and then Fox News will underscore what they just heard.
Right.
But it will not change their minds.
Well, I'm not hearing a lot of flexibility in that statement, though. It sounds like
there could be.
Well, look, I want to know what the guy has to say. I want to know what our elected officials have to say. If it's bad, I will call them out on it. But I don't want them to not have that opportunity.
I just said on the Media Project that it's always better when public officials talk to the public. However, in the case of Trump, I think I've heard enough. I'd rather read it. I understand it's a constitutional requirement. If I had, as Ira says, any hope that he would be different or conciliatory or just even honest, that would be such a change. But after 2 years, nope. Done giving him chances.
Now, David, who writes me quite frequently, says to the panel, and reminds me of how sexist the Constitution is, because you know what they say?
There's no voting for women or equal rights for women.
Section 3 of the Constitution says, he, the president, shall from time to time give the Congress information of the State of the Union. That the president gives a State of the Union speech every January is precedent, but not required by the Constitution. Well, we've certainly covered that ground today,
mm-hmm.
haven't we?
Yeah.
Thank you for that, David. And Bob says, by any calculation, it will force hundreds of the State of the Union, hundreds of unpaid federal workers to perform extra work if Trump's State of the Union speech takes place. Rich, please explain why that's okay with you.
It's not okay with me that people are out of work, and it's not okay with me that people are caught in the middle of what is essentially a political and not really anymore a policy debate. So that's not okay. But then let the president get up there and explain it. And if you don't like what he has to say, and if the country doesn't like what he has to say, then that will inure to his detriment, which is the way it should be.
I heard something on either NPR or NBC this morning that I couldn't believe that I heard it right. They were talking about the TSA and the shutdown and Atlanta, which is getting the Super Bowl. And there are TSA workers who are scheduled to work at the Super Bowl for security. Even if they were getting paid, I don't understand why that's necessary.
The whole TSA thing, I don't understand how you could be an essential worker and still not get paid. I understand essential versus non-essential, but
There's no money in the budget. That's the whole problem. There's no money in the pot because Congress has not acted, has not done its job.
Here's what I think.
But soldiers are getting paid, right?
Not the Coast Guard.
Not the Coast Guard,
deals coming through.
I was going to say
the unsecured walled border is the problem.
An arbitrary. It seems like a very arbitrary distinction to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alan, go ahead. We have just about a minute before we should go to... Do you want to go to a break now and then come back, or do you...
You're the boss.
How many do you have there?
Three.
Okay, finish
okay,
those.
Okay, Michael says, State of the Union. Separation of powers and the respect for and acknowledgement of that fundamental core congressional principle is what is in play and will and should continue to be in play between Congress and the executive. Trump can say respectfully, okay, I will postpone until Congress and the executive can reschedule. And now in capital letters, or he can send it in writing. The State of the Union has, capital letters, not been stopped. And no one has tried to stop it from being communicated to the American people. That's from Michael. And Rachel's. What'd you say?
Man, what a yelling there.
Well, that's why you do it.
I know.
That's what capital letters are all about. Rachel says, invitation, correction. Good morning, panel. Pelosi did invite Trump. She sent the invite her first day as speaker. This letter is a follow-up to ask for a delay in the originally proposed date so that a speech is not given during the shutdown. Rachel.
Well, that's not a real invitation, though.
Anyway,
keep going.
Okay.
Yeah, I missed the part in the codicil to the Constitution where it has
that's like me
wording
in high school.
And templates.
It's like
for
when I'd ask somebody out in high
silly.
School and I'd say, when do you want to go? They'd be like, whenever, give me a call, whenever.
Me never.
Tonight? No, not tonight, but sometime.
I have other plans. Dagger to the heart. Okay, and Susan says, so
glad you're not still bitter about it, right?
No. Susan says,
there are certain names I still won't speak.
Go ahead, Susan.
I get it. Susan says, so true. Speaker Pelosi is asking the president to postpone the State of the Union address. The president closed the government, full stop. The state of the government is closed, in capital letters. Anything he has to say beyond that is pointless until the government reopens. That's from Susan.
All right. Let's hold there. We'll take a break. We'll come back. More hilarity will ensue. We'll be right back. Good morning. We took a break, and during the break, we got a whole new batch of letters. So we're going to go to those, and then we'll move on to Rich? You want to
so
move on to content?
Letters. Yeah, we want another
all right,
topic.
Well, the whole idea of this program was that it would be an interactive program. That's why
we interacted enough.
Yeah,
it's our turn to act.
All right. Alan, go through those, and then we'll move on to another topic.
Rosemary
he just vetoed
just
us.
Very mean. Alice says...
It's like being in the back seat of the car when your parents are
driving. I know.
Well, one,
no control.
One of the people in this room signs my paycheck, so let him read the letters.
Right. that's transparency. Okay.
It here says, and I don't know if this is a... See, you never know whether somebody's being properly critical. Yeah. So the subject line says, Sate of the Union and Security Working Without Pay. Is it possible Sate may be like a Satan or satiated?
It sounds like
a typo.
Like
that's a typo.
Yeah, okay.
No, that's a typo. Okay, I knew that.
Or it could be sated, right?
Yeah. There's another aspect of the move by Pelosi, a moral one. She doesn't want to compel security personnel to work without pay. Thank you, from Alice. That's right.
And there are some who question her sincerity about that.
Yeah, I mean, let's forgetting for a second the crisis they are in right now because of the cash flow they're not getting. If they work those shifts and their overtime, they will be paid. So,
yeah, but right now you got to put money on the counter.
Yes, that's why I
said. If you borrow money, you got to pay
the
vigorous.
The short-term impact is undeniable by everybody except Trump.
Oh, so you're coming around to my side?
No, I'm not sure which side you're on this one.
Yeah.
who's spinning like a top.
Daniel M. says, Pelosi's uninvite. Rich asked how we react to the same scenario during the Obama presidency. Seriously, Rich. Where were you during those 8 years? We've likely never seen a more obstructionist Senate and the House. Thanks, and that's from Daniel. Anything?
Except for this Senate. But, yeah.
The right? Senate is obstructionist. I agree with that.
And it's going to be any Senate from now on, right? It's going to be any Senate that's in or the minority part of any Senate that or anybody yes. who can stop them from mustering 60
that
votes.
That is the system.
You know.
Okay, John MSW writes us the following letter. Good morning, panel. Wants to write about Rudy. Please tell us what value Rudy Giuliani brings to the Trump administration.
Comic relief.
Every time he speaks, it is confusing, contradicting the previous statements, and frankly, embarrassing. How is it possible that the Trump administration thinks he's helpful? Or is this part of a more nefarious strategy about misinformation, et cetera? Shed light, good people.
I got to tell you, that one has me stumped.
Well, I've had
not the letter, but what he brings up in the letter. That one has me stumped. I'm not sure what value Rudy is bringing.
I think that Trump thinks he's good on television, and he's not afraid to lie, so that puts him in his corner, and his base seems to respond well to him.
I wrote what you said. That's right. Okay, and Gina says shutdown. Morning. I commend you playing nicely this morning. I just spoke to Delgado's CC.
What show is she listening to?
I don't know. We're not done yet.
I just spoke. Will you all shut up?
That does make you want to act out.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I couldn't avoid it.
We're really losing our pacing here.
I just spoke to Delgado's DC. I just spoke to Delgado's DC office. The shut is having two major immediate effects on New York 19. An in-district workshop scheduled for next week was just canceled, and they are getting many calls from our neighbors adversely affected by the Trump shutdown.
Delgado also canceled a scheduled speech before the Ulster County Chamber of Commerce next week because he has to stay in Washington.
Mm. And do what?
Well, they made a point of saying everybody is supposed to stay in Washington. It was supposed to be recess starting next week, and they've canceled the recess.
All right.
Move ahead.
Yes. Well, no. Go ahead. More letters. Yes.
All right. And then we heard from Neil, who said something other than Trump, please. Good morning. I understand the desire to pile on Trump and continue harping on the shutdown, but isn't there anything else worth
Brexit,
talking
Syria.
About? For example, can anyone explain why the Schoharie County DA refused
or Schoharie.
That's great.
Refuses to allow the NTSB access to the limo responsible for the terrible crash. Thanks, keep up the work. P.S. The State of the Union is essentially political theater. In my opinion, a written version is fine, and that's from Neil. Thank you, Neil, for checking in. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, we sort of chuckled at his
Schoharie
County.
Yeah, I didn't know that was true. I think if that's true, that's pretty scary.
No, it is a big deal. Right. It is a very big deal.
All politics is local. These are important subjects that throughout everywhere in the country.
Not only that, Andrew, my new friend.
the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, yes.
Said no more stretch limousines. He wants to outlaw them. Do you think that's freedom of speech to have a stretch limousine?
I think that's a little bit of an overreaction. I think it would be better if they had stretch limousines that were properly inspected and not allowed on the road.
Built.
What's the ostensible reason for not allowing? Is it because the DA is doing an inspection? What's the ostensible reason for not allowing the feds to inspect?
We've covered the story, and I don't know enough about it to talk about it in give you an answer, but I can do my homework and get back to you.
It's okay.
Rich H. and Rosemary.
I'll send you an article. Go ahead.
Rich, as an independent voter, I respect your courage to take on the entire panel. Rosemary, it was a pleasure to hear you on the panel these past weeks. Please take care when you return to Jordan. And that's Jeff from New Paltz.
It's very
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
You be careful, too.
From New Paltz. I always say the emphasis on the Paltz because I taught there for 40 years, and I figure I've earned my spurs. And if I want to say New Paltz.
Okay, this is a real, we're way out of off the rails now.
All right, Bobby says.
Fire Island will be next.
Bobby says, blame game. Dear Alan, I always admire...
You're pulling the pin as you walk out the door, aren't you?
I am.
Bobby says, blame game. Alan, I always admire you when you talk about Fire Isle. No, she didn't say that. Bobby, blame game. Good morning, panel. Rich, yeah. Who do you blame for the shutdown? Thanks. Bobby from Bennington.
I think that initially it was Trump's decision to do the shutdown.
He said so.
Yes. And I do blame the Democrats for not coming to the table. But now that they have decided they're not going to come to the table no matter what, I personally reopen the government. Of course, then I would shut down the border the next day, but I would reopen the government.
I mean, don't we have a smoking gun here? Beyond the fact that Trump was taking the blame himself before the shutdown, we know that the Senate and the House passed legislation, the Senate, I believe, by 100-0, mm-hmm. and Trump pulled the pin on it and wouldn't sign it.
Yeah, because
how else could it not be his fault?
Because these are the same bodies that have been saying for the last 20, 30, how many times have you heard somebody say comprehensive immigration
reform?
Yeah,
but they agreed to it, that both houses of the legislature agreed to it, and then because they were told he was going to sign it, and he didn't sign it.
Yeah, because it didn't include funding for the...
Well, he didn't ask for that.
He shouldn't have said outside.
He asked for the five whatever it is billion that he got and that is in the bill.
No, because and then a couple of jokers on Fox.
That's right.
Yeah, Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh.
Come on. Okay, one more, Joe.
Oh my God.
Do you mind my
all right,
name?
One
God,
more
the
and
long,
then we're going.
Stop writing letters. Alan's reading them all.
Reed says, panel. Rich, yes, it is very disappointing to see Democrats have to address these existential issues in non-conventional ways. However, I would like to remind you that all of this started with the use of counter-majoritarian tactics used by conservatives to stay in power because they cannot tolerate the cultural change within this great country.
I would say that Trump has been an agent of the cultural change as elected on a populist groundswell.
And nice use of the word majoritarian.
Yeah, I like that.
There are a lot of good words.
Sounds
in that
good. Yeah, very much so.
Is it a word?
And he did not sign PhD or whatever.
I don't know. If it is, it is now.
We'll make it a word.
Oh, I've heard majoritarian.
Is that Ray... the rule? One use and then it's a word? I like that.
Well, we're all going to calm down. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We've got a photo op going on, and all right, very nice. Rich has asked Sarah to take a picture. Sarah's taking the picture, and because Rich likes to.
Gladys Knight and the Liberals.
No, I have to. Thank you.
You have to.
I've been compared to worse people than Gladys Knight, by the way. She is very cool. So,
all right.
Just saying.
Well said.
I have to take pictures to explain to my partners why I'm foregoing 2 hours of billable time every time I'm here.
Wow.
So they need to know where I am.
What does that amount to?
Like none of our business.
$2,000.
No, it's less than a grand.
Really?
Oh, that's pretty good.
You're a price. Yeah, I keep it under $500 an hour.
Wow. All right. Well, we thank you for doing it. And you know you're always invited and welcome.
But you ain't getting no $500 from us.
He's painfully aware of that.
Not even a hamburger.
Not even a bagel.
All right. Here we go. We've asked for more stories. Rosemary has requested
asked, I've
them.
Demanded it. Yes,
okay, you
please.
Demanded it. All right. So let's talk about Syria. Talk about the Syria policy. Killing of four Americans in Syria throws a spotlight on Trump's policy. This from the Washington Post. The four Americans killed in Syria on Wednesday, two soldiers, a Defense Department civilian, and a military contractor matched the largest number of deaths from hostile fire in a single incident overseas since Donald Trump became president. The killings in a suicide explosion claimed by the Islamic State came less than a month after Trump declared the militants defeated and ordered that the 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria be withdrawn. Since then, the administration's strategy has been thrown into confusion as Trump's defense secretary resigned in protest. The announced pace of withdrawal has varied, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has sought aid from Arab allies. New conditions have been set for the U.S. departure, even as the president has said he is determined that the troops leave sooner rather than later. Rosemary.
I don't know that I want to go first. The part of the story that most intrigued me was Pence, the vice president, who gave a speech yesterday in which he touted the defeat of ISIS. Right,
both before and after the attack.
Yeah. And was that a mistake or was it bad wording or what did you make of that?
I thought his actual wording was the destruction of the ISIS caliphate.
Yeah.
Crushed the ISIS caliphate and devastated its capabilities, he said, using an acronym for the Islamic State. As we begin to bring our troops home, we will never allow the remnants of ISIS to reestablish their evil and murderous caliphate. Not now, not ever.
I think, Rosemary, to answer your question, I've noticed they have been careful in, you know, kind of designing the parameters of this to talk about the caliphate and not necessarily things like
individual
this.
Individual attacks,
yeah,
that could continue.
To be fair, and I know nobody wants to be fair, I don't know that anybody, I don't know that anybody is going to really be able, is going to consider like a kind of a zero attack as though that is your parameter. I just don't think that's possible to do with terrorists.
But what they could consider is that had this been done in the correct way, and by the way, as I've said repeatedly, I support a pullout from Syria. Had it been done in the way a normal president would have, under, say, Mattis directing it, these attacks would have been perhaps planned for and might have been avoided. It's hard to say, of course, but it does raise, and if there are more attacks, I think the criticism will be louder.
I'd be disappointed if they were not already taking extraordinary security precautions just wherever they are there. But
disappointment is something we've
got used to in this administration. I thought I read yesterday that in light of the changing in policies that the Russians and Assad were responsible for security in that particular town. That what struck me about this, beyond what Rosemary brought up about Pence, was that how many times did we hear Trump during the campaign talk about not saying in advance what his military plans are going to be. I mean, he made a big announcement about us getting out of Syria sooner than later. Mm-hmm. Why did he broadcast that? By his definition, he played his cards. He put his cards on the table before he had to. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're finding more and more how poor a negotiator this guy is. They ought to take all remaining copies of The Art of the Deal and put a magic marker across through the title.
Did either? I'm going to ask because I have you know journalistic experts here. Did any? And I'll just ask you. The Joe was referring to a New York Times article, which Joe actually
Washington Post.
Oh, was what? Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
The Washington Post article. And
I know they're all the same to you.
They are all the same to me. Which he sent around. And did either of you, just from a journalistic standpoint, have any pause with that story? It seemed to me there was a lot of opinion mixed in with the recitation of facts in that story. I'm wondering if a journalism student, if one of your students gave it to you, you know, is that an A-plus story?
I will tell you before the real journalism experts weigh in on this, I will tell you that one of the reasons that I looked at that story and thought it was interesting was because it married two stories that we could discuss, both about Trump and about what happened yesterday. I did notice in most other journalistic accounts it was simply about the attack and those who were killed. But your point, which I think is a good one, of bringing in and asking the question about what impact the Trump decision had on that attack did seem a bit of
opinionated,
yeah. A bit of a reach.
I can't give a good answer on that. I'm going to go back and read it now after you've asked the question. I was looking specifically for Pence. TV, cable TV specifically, made Pence's speech sound like a real gaffe, like he didn't know what had happened or didn't care about it and was speaking, bragging when he shouldn't have been. I found this article more nuanced, that yes, you know, the same point you made, that he was speaking about overall they had been crushed, although attacks would continue.
Yeah, I'd like to see how it was laid out and displayed. The headline of this Washington Post story is "Killing of Four Americans in Syria Throws Spotlight on Trump's Policy," which one could argue does
that's
present
fair.
A point.
I didn't have a problem
but
with that.
But I'm wondering
that.
Whether this was laid out in, as an analysis piece, in which case opinion would be allowed.
No, I mean, this is the front of their national security page, Ira.
Right, but was it an analysis in addition to other
I don't think
coverage?
So, no.
Since then, the administration's strategy has been thrown into confusion as Trump's defense secretary resigned in protest.
That seems true.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I think basically we agree with you, Rich.
I think newspapers, certainly the Washington Post, has moved to the idea that instead of objectivity, the removal of all opinion, the new norm is you give your opinion, but you say it's an opinion, and you tell what it's based on so that you invite response back. Transparency.
Well, in the opinion set, but this was proffered as a news story.
No, in the news I'm talking about. That, this is a change.
That seems kind of nuanced to me. My opinion, I don't know that Rosemary would agree, I think this is a change in part motivated by the economics of the industry. The newspapers who only run the straight lead that people have heard on TV for the prior 24 hours are not going to be presenting anything that people want to buy.
Absolutely. Much better response when you give an opinion. Yeah. Columnists get
but
better
you know
read
what?
Than...
I hear that, but Joe just gave me a book today, so I'm thinking there was another book you gave me, which was a book called 1948.
Yes.
Talked about, you know, the Truman. And in it, there's a quote from I.F. Stone, the mm-hmm. great journalist.
We know who he is.
I knew him.
Well, okay, I know you guys know, but I had only just learned, you know, that from the book. And from my journalism classes at UAlbany. But one of the things you said, at the time, radio was starting to compete with newspapers. And the question was, how do you compete? How could newspapers possibly compete with radio? And I.F. Stone said, by reporting the news better. By reporting the news better and in more depth. And just doing a better job reporting the news. And I think it's the same, you know, whether it's internet or anything else.
Well, by 1948, radio had long ago been competing with newspapers. That dates back to the beginning of the last century.
And you know what was coming.
50 was when TV started coming in.
TV, yeah.
And when TV came in and when radio came in, everybody said, oh, there's the death knell for newspapers. And newspapers were able to survive and thrive up until the internet. And the internet really was what put the dagger.
And objectivity did come in because of Walter Winchell, actually. He was the proponent of that policy. And he meant objectivity in the sense that you just described. All opinion is in there. All ideas are in there. And you compare it all. It somehow got warped into the idea that there's no opinion at all. That became that's the definition of objectivity that I have always objected to. You can't do it. It's dishonest.
Yeah, I don't know how you could possibly write
it.
There was also a phenomena because there was not as much broadcast or internet, and there was no internet. There were morning papers and there were afternoon papers. And when you wrote for an afternoon paper, you wrote what was called a PM lead. It was a more featurey approach because, again, it was presumed that people read more than one newspaper and already knew in that morning what the story was.
Those were the days. Yeah. You're making me homesick.
But this story could have been, if this story was written, I won't do the same, if this story was written 4 years ago or something like that, but if this story was written by a friendly news outlet, couldn't it have said, you know, it would have described the incident and then it would have been, underscoring the concerns raised by the Trump administration with the security situation and the need to get American soldiers out of there.
Except that's not true. He never mentioned the security situation.
No,
he didn't. He said he wanted to get out there because we won.
Rosemary, not only did he mention it, he actually got pilloried because he said we're losing too many lives there, and people were saying we haven't actually, you know,
thank God
we haven't lost any I don't think we had lost very many military lives in Syria. So he actually did say that. But my point is, the story is presented. I think there's a lot of opinion marbled into the story. Is all I'm saying.
Point
you may
made.
Be right.
Okay, let's move on to another story. We want to talk about emoluments. Rosemary, do you want to take this one? So the agency ignored constitutional questions about the Trump Hotel lease. This is another one of these stories that I read and I thought, well, didn't we already know that?
This has been a controversy since the inauguration.
Yes.
That lease is very clearly says you cannot be an office holder and have any involvement in the lease. And the Trump argument is that, well, when I signed that lease, I wasn't president, so it's okay. And so it clearly set up an argument about the emoluments clause and the handling of this lease specifically. And it's taken 2 years to wind to this point.
And we know one, I'm checking in only because I've been silent for a while. I want people to know I'm here still. But I have to say the one thing that we do know is that foreign governments have been setting up all kinds of things in the hotel, knowing full well what they're doing and how they're going to get something back for it. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big test because Trump is the first really rich guy that we've had in office who's not truly divested or divested at all of his business holdings. Mm-hmm. And so it's a test of a part of the Constitution that's not been much litigated in the past. It's very interesting. However it comes out will be important to American democracy.
We should mention, I think it's worth mentioning, and I don't know if how much it's been mentioned, but while all of D.C.'s attractions run by the Park Service are shut down, the one attraction that is run by the Park Service that is in the Trump Hotel remains open. Isn't that mysterious?
Yeah.
Very strange.
Clock tower that is operated by the clock tower, the old post office clock tower that is in the Trump Hotel, is still being operated by the Park Service.
Well, that's what makes me...
That's essential.
It just makes me furious. I asked Rich of this the last time he and I were both on at the same time. So many things such as that are going on that one would think that even his base would be disgusted with and would say, we can't be behind this guy. He's a con man. He's a grifter. And I don't understand why that 33% is 33%. One would think it would be halved at least by now.
We are seeing polls coming out today, however, two major polls that shows that not only are his favorability ratings going down.
Minusculely, by the way.
But they're going down amongst key parts of his base. We also have heard reports that he is, to use, I believe, a New York Post term that they said, is freaking out over it, that the shutdown.
He's freaking out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Over the
He said he's getting crushed.
Okay, so if you were him, what would you do right now?
Reopen, right? Or at least try.
Well, you reopen, you lose the base. That's his fear.
What'd you say?
I say we got back to Trump.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, we can't
plus,
do that.
we have to read this letter that refers to...
Oh, now you want the letters.
Well, because it says... Because I just noticed it was sitting in front of me.
He grabbed it right, Joe. I'm sorry. He grabbed it right in front of me.
You're too frequent guest, Rich.
You're here like...
T-O-O.
You're here more than the governor.
These governors catching it.
No, 2-0-0.
She can't help
herself. I like that. You're too frequent guest, Rich.
You're here like once a month, if we're lucky. I would have you
here. And that's obviously too frequent.
I'd have you here every day if I could.
Yeah, so would I.
We're going to have to go down to quarterly or something.
All right, Alan, go to some letters.
Okay.
We'll finish up that way.
Here we go. All right, here we go. Barr and Rich. After listening to the testimony of Barr and knowing this guy has passed, we should all pray that there is a Daniel Ellsberg in the wings ready to make sure we all have the opportunity to read the full text of Mueller's report. Barr certainly gave notice that he was ready to redact much of the report. In today's world, what is on the menu is often classified as top secret. As an aside, your too frequent guest, Rich, is a good example of Trump's base and his thinking and why we are in such a mess. Joe from Clifton Park.
Does anybody in this room think that we're not going to see the Mueller report? It'll get out.
I believe you're
Adam
right.
Adam Schiff alone makes confident we'll see.
No, we're going to. Adam Schiff has been he's been a real hero in all of this, but I agree with you. You don't think so?
I am so sick of him. I think he's overexposed.
They're overexposed.
And you know exactly what he's going to say. No.
I think you're dead wrong. I think he's terrific, and I think he deserves the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Oh, my God.
And not only that,
that's
but
so
when everybody else was scared, he was out there doing it. Now, I notice that he shares the credit with the other guys on his committee now. They come on much more than they did in the beginning. In the beginning, it was only him. Okay, I have more to say.
Please.
I'm mortified.
Oh, boy, here she comes. State of the Union speech. Rich seems to think there is no way to know what Trump thinks except by giving the speech. Hasn't he ever read any of Trump's tweets? Linda from Hurley. Everybody keeps it down. Peter says Trump should speak. Hi, gang. I guess I agree with Rich on Trump delivering the State of the Union. I think it would set a bad precedent going forward. I also believe that Speaker Pelosi should have a tasteful sign that reads, "Can I get a fact check?" she should discreetly raise the sign every time Trump strays from the truth. I hope her arms can handle the workout.
Can you imagine? That would be spectacular.
Borrow one of Melania's coats. When did I have it say that on the back?
I'm always surprised there are not more. I'm not going to say shenanigans. I'm always surprised there's not some kind of subtle something going on with those two people
like little
sitting
bunny ears and that kind of thing?
I don't want to say even eye rolling, but just something subtle, but... But
because even though they're politicians, they're adults. And I'm not sure that we can say that about the man-child.
And Peter ends his very good letter by saying, thanks for the discussion. There That's Peter from Herkimer, where?
Diamonds. Everyone diamonds. Diamonds.
Well, you're looking confused.
I went digging for Herkimer diamonds one
time.
That's
right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. You go there and they you pay a certain amount of money and they give you a little hammer and you pound on rock and you look for their quartz crystals.
They're not real diamonds, but they're diamond mines. One year they were great with us. They gave us that to give out as a thing in the fund drive, you know, as a premium. And then they never would again. So
they never will again?
They never did again. Oh. Steve says Rosemary is right. Panel doesn't need any more opinions than those from the panel itself. Letters from the audience are a waste of time, except for mine, of course, as he concludes his letter.
Well done.
That's very cute.
And Barry says, Giuliani, Rudy turns New York City around. He is the epitome of the Trump rough white man image. He's the 21st century Joseph Goebbels. Just continue to speak the words and people will believe it.
It is strange. I used to so admire him.
Rudy?
I would have voted for him at one point for president. And he's now I'm sorry, aside from his opinions, which I don't agree with, he's just freaking unhinged.
I gave up on him for I kind of liked him for a while, too. And
He was a great prosecutor.
He cleaned up the city.
He did clean. I think I think he reached his peak as mayor. I think as prosecutor, people forget how many of those convictions were overturned on appeal.
That's true.
You know, he really had a very bad right, almost edging towards kind of unjust.
Really?
But just as mayor, you know, you have these people in public who sometimes their highest office is not their best moment. You know, John Adams kind of comes to mind. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A guy who you know, had he never been president or vice president, you know, he would be such a bigger hero now than he really is. Mm-hmm. But
I was watching Law and Order one day.
Okay.
We have about 15 seconds.
And Lenny shoves up the guy against the wall and said, don't forget, it's Giuliani time.
We're going to end on that note. My thanks to everybody. Rich, we'll see you soon. We'll be back.
All too frequently.